I'm Florence Ion, and this week on All About Android, it's a made by Google kind of week. We've got so much hardware and new software to discuss, but before we get into it, why is Google Plus shutting down? Find out all this and more on All About Android, next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Most job boards overwhelm you with tons of wrong resumes. Not smart. ZipRecruiter finds the right people for you and actively invites them to apply. Smart. Try for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Android. And by LegalZoom. Check out LegalZoom today to see how they can make life better for you and your business. For special savings, visit LegalZoom.com and enter AAA at checkout. And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/android.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to All About Android. This is episode 390, recorded live on October 9th, 2018. We are your weekly source for latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I am Florence Ion.
And I'm Ron Richards. And this is a big, big show because this is the day of the big Made by Google announcement. And Jason is not here to join us.
Nope.
But we have a very good replacement.
Yes, we do. We have Duncan Jaffrey, who's joining us over not only from Down Under, but also from Ozdroid. Hello, Duncan.
Hello. Hi, Jason. Hi, Flo. Ron, even.
Even when Jason's not here, his presence overwhelms.
It does. And I cannot wait to hear what Jason thinks next week about all of these crazy announcements that have happened today. Today has just been a really long day, so much so that I probably sound like I'm rambling right now because, again, it's been a very long day for the three of us here at the table today. Ron, in particular, has also had a long day. Ron, would you like to tell everyone about your long day?
It was a long day with a lot of information. Well, so I got up and I did all my work in the morning, and then I got to go downtown to the Made by Google event, and that was awesome. And then I had to go back to work and then come home and go here you can see on Instagram my badge.
Yay.
And then also, if you go to the next story, Victor, which is good work here. Oh, no, these are the photos from it. I'm sorry. I put in the link my Instagram. Here you go. I put it in the chat. But I was able to see so many of our friends in person.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Because usually we're all congregated into small warehouse space somewhere here. But this time,
yeah,
the glory came to you in New York. So a bunch of people were like, oh, is that happening in Queens? So I guess it was downtown then.
It was downtown in by the Holland Tunnel. So it's down in on Varick Street, actually. It was at Spring Studios, which is where Microsoft has held events before. But we're getting into it. We're going to get to that later on. There's a big news story we got to talk about first, and then we'll get into the whole event.
So
Victor, why don't we go into the news?
Speaking of seeing all your friends, what am I going to do now? Speaking of the first story, here's Android News.
I was like, oh, that was really sad, Victor.
I told
everybody, you know, the format's all better and it's nice there, and then nobody follows you, so.
Well, yeah. Victor, you've had a while to find a new social network. And now you'll really have to find one because Google Plus is going the way of the dodo, which is a bird that is extinct, in case you people are wondering. So in a blog, this all came out earlier this week after a report in the Wall Street Journal. But basically, Google went forward and just did it. It pulled the plug on Google Plus. In a blog post, Google announced that it would be shutting down the consumer version over the next 10 months. So those with really, beautifully created networks will have to unfortunately find probably another place to continue congregating online. So why is Google shutting this down? I think that's a question a lot of us have on our minds, besides the obvious, which is, was anybody still using it? Well, Google explained that Google Plus has had low usage. So yes, because not as many people were using it, it wasn't, didn't seem to really be worth to keep it plugged in. And engagement with 90% of user sessions lasted less than 5 seconds each time. That's not, I mean, that's a really high bounce rate. That's
which by the way, I saw that fact and then I thought about how long does it take to vote in the Android arena, and I feel like it's about 5 seconds. So I'm really wondering how much of an influence we had on Google Plus's bounce rates.
I didn't even think about that. Well, thank you everyone for helping keep Google Plus alive. But digging deeper, it's a little deeper than just like the lack of users and also that really high bounce rate. The shutdown was also related to that undisclosed security flaw that exposed the profile data of users and was fixed in March 2018. But reports had said that Google had known about this, or rather, this had been going on for about 3 years. So from 2015 to 2018, and that's not good, Bob. It's not good at all.
So, Duncan, what did you make of this news?
Yeah, I was a little disappointed that they knew for as long as they did and didn't make it public. I believe they're going to be in some trouble with GDPR now, with the 72 hours or whatever it is they get to report the issue. So I'd really like to have an explanation of what's happening there. I can understand there was a security flaw in the protocol and data leaked. I just prefer that when they find out about it, they notify people. I used to be a good Google Plus user. I'm a Facebook non-user. I'm a conscientious objector to all Facebook products. So, you know, that was the network I did use. So it'll be interesting to see what rises up beyond the Facebook space.
Ron, is this going to affect you?
Well, it's going to affect us in that I think we need to address the elephant in the room.
Yes.
In that it's going to affect us in that we are going to need to find a new home for our polls. Here on the later in the show when we get to the Android arena, we've been holding our polls in Google Plus because we've got the lovely All About Android community there. That's the only negative I have for this. I've abandoned Google Plus posting to it. I found similar, you know, kind of there is engagement. I've had it for us, there's engagement, but I feel like we're a select group of people who are already subscribed to, you know, the Google ecosystem, being Android users and stuff like that. So, of course, we're there. But for every job I've had since Google Plus came out, we posted there and it's like crickets, right? And I've worked at pretty good places. I've had some good stuff to post. And it doesn't have the engagement that Facebook and Instagram have had. And it's not Google Plus's fault. It's because Google put it on the shelf and stopped innovating with it.
Yeah.
Right. They added some tweaks here. They changed the design. They changed the code, but there wasn't any real like Instagram added stories. Facebook, you know, like Facebook added all this, like has been continually adding functionality where Google Plus has just kind of been there. So I'm not going to miss it. I don't think it's sad. But going back to the poll issue, and also everybody panicking about it being gone and whatnot, it's going to be sunset in 10 months.
We have time.
Yeah, the poll is safe. It's not going anywhere. We don't have to worry about that. We will find a new solution. But this week we're going to be on Google Plus. We'll probably be there next week. We'll probably go through the end of the year. Maybe we'll switch to something in January just to have a year of data. But I think the real story is, like Duncan mentioned, is it seems as if they shut this down as opposed to reporting it, which the data breach, which is really kind of bad in it. And being in the audience at the Google event today, this never came up. They never addressed it. They referred to security a couple of times, but never even, you know, and which I get from a corporate kind of PR standpoint, you don't want to do it. But I thought they would address it in some way because it hit the news yesterday, right? And this is a pretty big deal. This blog post on their blog for Project Strobe spins it in a way that like this breach allowed us to now fix our APIs, to do all this sort of stuff. And like it's all these findings that they have that have come from this whole thing. So shutting down Google Plus, like they're changing the modals for using logging in with a Google account. They're changing all their you know, doing a lot of infrastructure work that seems to all come from whatever this breach was. So I feel like this is like a fascinating onion that we barely know exactly what's going on, you know?
I wonder if we'll ever find out. I have this whole scenario in my head that Wall Street Journal reporter called someone at Google and said, I've got this story. Can you confirm it or not? You have until this time. And then Google was like, well, they're just going to go out with it. So we might as well just sunset Google Plus now because we were planning on putting it to bed anyway. And I mean, I kind of always figured that Google Plus, like everything Google does, a lot of the things that they, and which we will talk more about later, because there's definitely evidence of that just from today's event, is that everything it does is a stepping stone for another feature coming sooner or later. And so I'm not surprised that that's what Google Plus existed for. I'm not surprised that it exists. Maybe it was just a testing ground for all these things. Maybe that's what it really was. And when they saw that it wasn't really working as a social network, they were like, we'll just keep it around until we've milked it for all it's worth. And maybe it just, everything just happened. And, you know, right now, Venus is in retrograde. And when Venus is in retrograde, it's really time for us to rethink our relationships, the people around us. And so this is just Google fulfilling, you know, the lunar placement.
I don't know about that. I also don't know about I don't know if the point you made about some reporter was going to report on this, so they decided to announce it. The blog post is pretty in depth, and it looks like they've been planning this for a while. Like this isn't a reactionary
it was an obituary. They've been working on, and so somebody said, "Bring out the obituary. It's time."
I don't know about that. I think you're getting a little too conspiratorial there.
Yeah, I know, but apparently, I was bored today, so I came up with a conspiracy theory.
So the interesting thing, and Duncan, I'd love to hear what you think about this, is that the one thing that we're kind of glossing over is that they said that they're shutting down the consumer version of Google Plus. Mm-hmm. So what does that mean?
So from what I've read, they're keeping open the Teams version, part of the paid G Suite app service, saying that it's a powerful collaboration tool. So I wonder if it's too deeply wound into the background of some of their more paid business-focused products that they can't actually shutter that without damaging their paid offering for businesses. So what part of the G Suite.
What about, now I don't know if this is connected, but I'm just wondering. I know that I've used Google Plus to basically log in all over the web with OAuth, so I'm wondering, like, what about that? I mean, are those separate? Do we know if those are separate entities or?
Wasn't that all combined? Or the single Google logon now. So I think when that happened, all of the Google Plus authorizations you used to have has now moved over to your standard Google account.
That makes sense.
So I don't think there's a difference between a Google logon and a Google Plus logon. And I haven't actually seen the Google Plus logon icon in quite some time.
I still see it around. I guess that's why it's a little confusing. Now I guess everybody's going to have to change their icons.
You must hide in some dusty corners of the internet.
Yes, this is true. I do use outdated software. Oops. Shall we get into it?
Before we move on, so Google Plus, RIP... Big data breach that I'm sure we're going to hear more about. That's the developing story, I think.
Developing story.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, before we get into the big event, let's thank one of our sponsors. We want to thank ZipRecruiter for sponsoring this episode of All About Android. And listen, there are job sites out there that make you wait for the right candidates to apply for your job. Not smart. But you know what is smart? Going to ZipRecruiter.com/Android to hire the right person. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful matching technology scans thousands of resumes, identifies people with the right skills, education, and experience for your job, and actively invites them to apply so you get qualified candidates fast. That's why ZipRecruiter is rated number one by employers in the U.S., and this rating comes from hiring sites on Trustpilot with over 1,000 reviews. And listen, I this past year, I've hired so many positions at my day job, and I gotta tell you, it is so hard to find the right candidate, the candidate that's got the experience you're looking for, the skills you're looking for. I get hit with a tidal wave of resumes that I've got to spend time sifting through. ZipRecruiter really takes the pain out of something that is necessary to running your business. So you need to hire the right people, and ZipRecruiter can help you do that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at our exclusive web address, at ZipRecruiter.com/Android. That's right, totally free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Android. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Android. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Thanks, ZipRecruiter. So That said, we don't have a bumper for the Made by Google event, but we're going to start with hardware. So, Victor, do you want to give us some hardware?
All right. We've got the Pixel 3 and the Pixel 3 XL. So I suppose
let's back up. So let's set the stage. So Victor, if you want to pull up the photo gallery again, I added in the photo I wanted earlier. So I arrived to the Spring Studios in downtown New York City in the West Village, and I there's a little breakfast kind of spread with coffee and tea and croissants and things like that. And who do I run into? But it's like a who's who of All About Android friends of the show. Here you can see me with our good friend, Mr. Mobile, Michael Fisher, and Joshua Vergara. That's the only photo I have, Victor, so that's all. But just to proving that we were all there. But I saw Miriam. I saw Tim Schofield, QB King 77. Mm-hmm. Everybody was there, and it was nothing but excitement. And Google did a really good job with the presentation. It was a really good keynote. It was well done. There was a couple of technical glitches here and there, but nothing that was like demo fail or anything like that. It was just there was one particular demo where the speaker wasn't synced with the video, but they got over that very quickly. And everybody was waiting for the Pixel 3 announcement, and they saved that to last. So Flo, what was the Pixel 3 announcement?
We had
no idea what it was. It wasn't leaked at all. So
it wasn't. Yeah, it wasn't leaked at all. Well, except for that, right before the event, Google had tweeted a whole video of all the announcements. It was just like out there. So we knew that these three big things were coming. So there were three big things. The very last thing that was mentioned, the thing we kind of all knew was coming, were the two Pixel 3 phones. So we have the Pixel 3 and the Pixel 3 XL, just like last year's models and the year before. One is a little more handheld and the other one is a little bigger. So let's quickly go down some of those specs. I just want to quickly go down them. So 5.5-inch screen on Pixel 3, 6.3-inch screen on the Pixel 3 XL. Both devices have a Snapdragon 845 processor in them with the Pixel Visual Core, 4 gigs of RAM, up to 128 gigabytes of storage, 12.2-megapixel rear-facing camera with optical image stabilization on the back. The front cameras this time around are two cameras. So both phones have two 8-megapixel cameras, both with varying apertures to kind of help you achieve the different effects. There's also a 75-degree lens and a 97-degree lens for helping you with like wide-angle selfies and things of the sort. No headphone jack. Sorry, it's not coming back. We still got the USB-C dongle life that we're living. The battery is actually, it's smaller in the Pixel 3 and it's bigger in the Pixel 3 XL, I hope I'm not mistaken. That's what I remember writing earlier today. So it was a 2,915 milliamp battery for the Pixel 3 and a 3,430 milliamp battery for the Pixel 3 XL. Both are IP68 water resistant. And what else are they? They're also capable of Qi wireless charging, which people have been asking for eons, I feel like, since the days of the Nexuses. We've been asking for wireless charging, which have come standard on so many of the competitors' phones from like LG and Samsung. And now we have our very own, including a stand that we can buy for an extra $80, which I did buy today.
Or it comes free if you order the phone from the Google store.
Really? Because I was not offered to me.
Oh,
In the United States.
In the United States, yeah. So Flo, you should have, yeah. Because that was my whole thing, was that I have a hard time getting excited for a charging stand. I have an even harder time getting excited for paying $79 for it. But they said if you buy the Pixel 3 from the Google store, you get the charging stand for free.
Well, maybe Google will email me and say, hey, you know what? You deserve this.
You screwed up.
You screwed. Maybe I did. I was moving really fast. I wasn't looking at what I was doing. I am super excited. So I ended up pre-ordering the not pink Pixel 3. So I've decided to go with the smaller version. And I want to hear, you know, before we move on to the other hardware, I want to hear what you guys thought about the new phones. And Duncan, because you've been waiting on the line, I'd like to start with you. What did you think about the phone announcements today?
Yes, well, I'm glad not every single detail of it leaked thoroughly and completely for weeks and weeks on end before it was announced. And I'm glad Google then trolled us with a tweet saying that there would be more information coming, despite the fact I didn't really see anything. But all of those snarky, sarcastic comments aside, I'm a Qi charging tragic, always have been. I absolutely love wireless charging, so I am very glad to see it returning front and center. So for me, that's exciting. I'm a little less excited, like Ron, of having to pay $120 Australian dollars to buy a wireless charger.
That's a lot.
If you pre-order in Australia, some of the telcos are giving us a free Google Home Mini, but not a charging stand, which we're a little miffed about, but we'll see what deals come out. The phone itself is iterative and move forwards. I'm also a massive proponent of the Courage port. so I'm disappointed to see that go. I was in Berlin IFA searching desperately a way of getting audio out of a telephone for a teleconference I was trying to get into, because the phone I was using wasn't paired to my Jabra Elites that I wear most of the time. But yeah, look, the camera looks nice. The XL I'm finding a little bit pricey for me for the improvement. 5.5 is big enough. I'm not a fan of the notch. So if I get one, I think it'll be a 64 gigabyte 5.5-inch Pixel 3.
Ron, you got to actually look at the phones.
I got to look at the phones. I got to hold the phones. I got to use the phones. I got to say, really nice. Really, really nice. The phones felt good. Like, you know the hand feel, you know, like that, yeah. That whole thing. Like, you know, they felt I got to admit, between the Pixel 3 and the Pixel 3 XL, I really like the feel of the Pixel 3. If I was gonna choose one or the other, I might go Pixel 3. I'm a little more used to a larger phone now that I'm using the OnePlus 6, and that's pretty big. But I held them side by side. I think, Victor, if you skip to the next picture, you can see them kind of side by side. They're not that far. You can see my shoe in that picture. It's funny. They're not that far off from a sizing standpoint. You know, like the Pixel 3 is bigger. It's not like the old small Nexus 5. But what I was impressed by is even the Pixel 3 XL felt good in the hand. It felt balanced. It didn't feel too heavy. It didn't feel the back of it, whatever they make the back glass with it now, felt like the combination of the smooth and the matte finish actually gave you this interesting kind of texture that it just fit. It just worked. My biggest takeaway from this phone, notch and all, on the Pixel 3 XL, and the whole line of products that they announced today, is that this is made by Google growing up. This is like when Android got super polished and the OS got a little better and stuff like that. All the changes we've been seeing with Android Pie, all the subtle font changes and stuff like that, it is now uniform across the line. Like, each product feels unified and it feels related to one another, and you get how they're all connected. And the design language is similar. Admittedly, I was there. So of course this is what they're going for to show it off. But they absolutely, I think they nailed it with the phone. I think it's really, really good. We're going to go through all the hardware here first. And then we'll get into the software stuff. But I think some of the software stuff is the real kind of, like, that's the real gem of the announcements.
I agree. I definitely, you know, I live streamed the event this morning with Leo, and then I worked on a story for Lifehacker this afternoon. So I got to really, like, read through all of the news, and all the analysis and everything just feels like this event was not so much about hardware as it was, look at the stuff that we can do to hardware. Look at the software that we could put on hardware. Look at the cool things we can do. So we've got more hardware to go through with lots of other cool stuff. So, yeah. I mean, I think, Duncan, if you want to lead us into the next.
Yep. Okay. The next thing that Google announced, or the preceding thing, was the Google Home Hub. Mm-hmm. So this is the next product in the Google Home range, and it's Google's first smart display. So if we jump on in, Victor, it's a 7-inch.
I've got some photos and some video there. Oh well, there's Duncan's article, but Victor, yeah. After this, I've got some video of the Google Home Hub and being worked.
We have so much to show and tell today.
I know, so much, too much.
So for $149 US or $219 for the Australian viewers, it's a 7-inch touch display. It doesn't have a camera, which we'll circle to back in a minute. It comes in four colors, chalk, which is the gray color, charcoal, which is the black, aqua, which is the blue, and sand, which is the pink color. And they're all available at launch. They're launching, I think it was US, Canada, and Australia on the 22nd of October, so just a couple of weeks away. And it's sort of Google's first entrant into the smart display space. They had a couple of tricks they'd hidden up their sleeve. So they brought the new HomeView option in, where you can get full control of your smart home devices. So for those who have been using Google Home and Google Assistant to control their smart assistant, all their smart devices, all of those that are hooked up to your account, you swipe down from the smart display and you will get into this new home view section, which then allows you to view the rooms or view different devices and control all of your Google Assistant compatible devices right from that smart display. And we've got something in software section a little bit later on about update to the Google Home app to bring similar functions. Being a video device, obviously, there's a strong focus on video. The screen comes with what they're calling ambient EQ. So it adaptively changes both the color saturation and the brightness throughout the day. So if you start the day in a darkened room and then move to natural sunlight and then move to yellow fluorescent lights throughout the day, the display will actively change the brightness of the screen, but also the color saturation. So at all points in time, the display is actually outputting the truest color they can to give you the best quality videos and photos. It comes with YouTube for content consumption, but also YouTube TV. And for buyers in the US, you'll actually get 6 months of YouTube Premium for free to get the YouTube TV experience. So be able to have the full YouTube TV experience on the device as well. With Google Photos, they've announced today Live Albums, which we'll cover a bit later on as well. But that allows you to, in standby mode, basically select the people you want photos of, and Google Assistant will intelligently take care of displaying the photos of those people throughout the day, and it'll dynamically create an album. So if you go away for a holiday and come back and walk into the house, your smart display will be displaying images from that most recent holiday with the people you've selected.
I wonder if you can do it with cats and dogs.
I believe you can. It's anything that's in your the pets
that
photos
you can
places.
Tag, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So you select the ones you want and it'll put through. It's got a couple of family-focused features, so that it's got filters so you can have safe search, so you're always getting family-friendly content. It's got like a downtime mode so that you can select when you want it to go into a low interruption mode, similar to Do Not Disturb on your phone. So you'll only get alarms and important notifications through, and it won't interrupt you, so that it's not disruptive in that perspective. And then I think that's it from the start point. It's got a lot of the standard features that we've seen in the Lenovo and the JBL and the soon-to-be-announced Sony smart displays. The lack of a camera is a shame for me, with Duo being what I think is a flagship feature of the smart display from Google Assistant. I don't know if that's for privacy concerns, whether they want to not compete too heavily with their OEM partners, but I think it's a bit of a stillbirth for me to not have that feature, to not have a camera on this device with Google's flagship entry into the space. If there were two models, one with, one without, I'd be okay with that. But what do you guys think?
I agree and disagree. I think that if they had two models, one with and one without, that would be a little better. But going to market with one without, I think, is genius, especially the day after Facebook announces their product which is the same similar kind of thing, but with a camera for video conferencing and all the privacy concerns with Facebook. I think look how many people put little pieces of tape on their webcam on their laptop, right? People don't want a camera all the time, possibly always on in your house watching you. I don't think we're ready for it yet. I don't think we trust these companies to do it yet. So I think by taking it off the table and out of the equation and keeping this device just doing what it is, which is a information display device and truly a home hub aspect for the smart home, I think is really a smart move. My takeaway from it and looking at it, and that's a great, Victor, that's what I wanted to show you. If you want to pause that video for a second, I was taken aback by how small it is. And it's hard to see in the video that Google made and even the video I made, because it looks like a tablet on top of like a Google Home base. But look in comparison, it's next to a Nest thermostat.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And we all know how big a Nest thermostat is, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is like less than a 7-inch tablet on top of a speaker. It's a small screen. It's small. It is not. And I wish I'd taken a picture of it kind of pulled back, or they had some setups with homes or whatever, but it's not a very large footprint screen, which I think is good, because that, because anything bigger is going to be, you're going to want to use as a television or use a home theater or for a video conference or whatever. But now it's just, it's for displaying information. Yes, there's YouTube in there, but it's a limited kind of interface on YouTube. Great point, Duncan, that you made, which Jason would love if he was here. There is a YouTube restriction mode, so you can you can restrict the number of you can restrict the content people get to YouTube. And part of it is just the whole home connection aspect, where like the Nest doorbell can, the whoever's at your door can show up on the home hub, and you can control that whole, and we're going to talk about it a little with the software side, but that whole panel, that dashboard for your home, just I feel like makes the smart home that much more accessible for people now through this one device. I was very impressed by this, and for $149, given that how much is the regular the or how much is the Google Home in the Google store,
the Google, it's like $120.
Yeah, it's really like, what is that big hunk of Google Home one? That
the Max is $399.
Yeah, so the Max is $399, and the regular Google Home is $129. For $149, you get a screen. That's great. That's awesome.
I do, before we move on, I do want to bring up the fact that they kept referring to it in the keynote, and I had quoted it several times, as the best photo frame. They kept making this callback to like it being a photo frame, and I think that that was... I think, Ron, you were right. It was like, you know, let's not put a camera on it, because it's just too much with everything else going on. And I also think that somebody was like, hey, let's market it as like the best photo frame, and that's what we're making it to be. And so this is going to be Google's way of just showcasing what Google Photos is capable of doing in your home. Like, this is the entry-level Google Photos device. That's kind of what I see it as. I know it does all these other things too, but the way it's being marketed and all of these new AI features that, you know, pick up all the right photos that you need, that you want to look at all the time. I mean, it really is a Google photo frame.
It is, but it also gives you more value than a photo frame, though. It gives you more functionality in the photo frame. I mean, part,
it's a
part
hub,
of it,
quote unquote.
Yeah, it's a hub. Like that's what they're
also
calling it.
Also, I just want to add very quickly, sorry, Ron, that I saw in the store and elsewhere that they're selling bundles of the Google Home Mini and some smart bulbs. So it's making me think that there's going to be more sort of functionality added to these things to make it like an Echo Plus, which has, you know, the protocol built in for like the smart home. So I'd be very interested to see if they really truly, you know, expand this to become like this home hub.
Well, no, that's exactly what they're doing. I mean, if you I don't have access to it, but in the I'm sure in here on the site dedicated to it, they talked about how it connects to over 1,000 devices and all this sort of thing. Like, it is, they are making the play to make this work with everything and make it be seamless. Because I forget the name of the woman, Dia, whatever.
Yes.
She, you know, she made the point that, you know, the smart home is complicated. And especially, and I don't know if it was her or Rick Osterloh, but it is complicated enough that it's difficult to turn the lights on.
Which
we all can attest to, and me living with you know, my wife is not as believe it or not as tech savvy as we are, and she yells at the dang thing because the lights won't work or the lights won't turn on. They've got to make it easier to connect and control, and that's what the hub is doing. So it's really impressive in that regard, I think.
Yeah, a hub like a Zigbee or a Z-Wave hub. I mean, for the lot of us, I feel like, of course, we could set that up, but I feel like for a lot of people, I don't really want to summon down that path. And the Google Home app, which we'll talk about more soon, is getting revamped for that reason. So,
yeah. On the Google Store page for it, they say it connects to hundreds of products.
Hundreds.
And it's just like a litany of logos. So
all very well known logos.
On stage, they said 200,000 products by, you know, over 1,000 vendors. I wonder if they mean that was actually 2 million, if that's what's been shipped, rather than the actual range you can buy.
Oh, it had to. I can't imagine there's 2 million smart home products. It's got to be the products that have shipped. Yeah.
A little disingenuous. It will be interesting to see how the silos go with this. People in chat are talking about it's going to work well with the Nest products, and they announced on stage they're working closer with Nest, but it looks like the Nest brand survives for now. But what about Ring? There's some integration with Ring, but will Ring full integration come through? And, as these walled gardens come up and as the Amazon and Google squabbling continues and the Google and the Madam A ecosystems begin to split and diversify, what will happen with that, with the hub?
Yeah, and I mean, I hope it does work with everyone with everyone that's out there, especially Ring, which is an advertiser on the Twit network or has been an advertiser on the Twit network. But there's so many options out there for smart home. And if they truly want to make it, kind of agnostic, it's got to work with everything. And I think they're making a step in the right direction. I'm scrolling through here and looking at all the logos they're showing. And I'm hard pressed to find a company that I don't, in the keynote, they only showed a handful up on the screen. And I noticed that Samsung wasn't up on there, at which I built my home network with the SmartThings platform. But looking on the site, Samsung is there. It does connect to smart home, smart things. So it looks as if they just want to make this work with everything, which is the smart move.
It's just anything you can log into. If you can log into it, Google wants to offer that for you. So this is going to expand. Shall we, Ron, move on to, is it a tablet? Is it a computer? What is it?
Yes, what is it? I'll tell you what it is. It is the Pixel Slate. That's what it is.
Okay.
And I'm going to go out on a limb and say this is a tablet.
Okay.
They never use the T word in the keynote. They called it a device. They called it a computer. They call stuff like that. But to me, and after holding it in my hand and using it and stuff like that, it is a iPad Pro competitor. It is a large tablet that, can connect to a keyboard. They've got the little, magnet floppy kind of a case thing that connects to the keyboard. It also has a pen, much like the Samsung S Pen. It has a stylus that you can use with it. But what's the interesting differentiating factor for this is that it's running Chrome OS. It's not running Android. And this is taking everything that they've learned from the Pixelbook, the experiment with the Pixelbook that Flo, you have right in front of you that you're using. And they applied it to this device, both from the OS interface, the way the apps work, the way everything works from there, as well as the keyboard. They took the engineering they took from the Pixelbook keyboard and applied that to this to the case keyboard that this comes with. And just before I get into my impressions of it and some of the cool things I saw it do, and you can hold on that photo, Victor. You can go to the story that we have with it. But so this is going to be – they've got three prices that are available for it. They've got – it's $599 gets you it with 4 gig of RAM and a 32 gig SSD hard drive inside with an 8th gen Intel Celeron processor. The mid-range is $699 with 8 gig of RAM, 64 gig storage with the same 8th gen Intel Celeron processor. And the top of the line is $799. We get you 8 gig of RAM, 64 gig storage, and the 8th gen Intel Core TMM3 processor, so slightly better processor. There's many more options here. I didn't realize this. There's also a $999 option that you get that for 8 gig and 8 gig of RAM, 128 gig storage with the Core TMI5 processor from Intel. And then finally, the top is $1,599, and that gets you 16 gig of RAM, 256 gig storage, and the Intel Core TMI7 processor. And that's just for the tablet or the device alone. If you want to add the keyboard, it costs $199. And then if you want to add the pen, that's an additional $99. And availability for this is later this year in the US, the UK, and Canada. Don't know about Australia, Duncan. I'm sorry. But hopefully it'll be in Australia soon.
No.
It just won't. Do you not want it?
Pixel. No, I'm desperate for it. This is the product I'm most excited for.
Oh,
but
really?
No, Pixel Chromebooks have never officially been sold in Australia.
Wow.
All the ones we get have to be brought in through third-party importers. We have Chromebooks from other suppliers. The only thing in this that makes it a not have already jumped online and imported one for me is the lack of LTE.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yep. Well, and that's what's interesting is that, what in terms of what this is, like, I struggled with it because it's they kept on saying it's a portable device with a desktop experience. And what actually blew my mind was, Victor, if you look at there's a photo of a desk, they have a desktop. The Pixel Slate can plug in via USB-C, I think, to another monitor. And so if you go a couple of pictures to the right there, that's me holding it. Yeah, so this is a desktop computer with a huge 4K Acer monitor plugged into the Pixel Slate.
What?
Exactly.
They didn't say any of this during the keynote. Like, that is a big – I mean, that's what Samsung leads with its DeX.
Exactly. That blew my mind. I actually there was a Googler at the station, and I was like, "Wait a minute." I'm like, "Is this monitor like connected to the tablet?" And she's like, "Oh yeah, it has support for up to two 4K monitors."
What?
So you could replace your laptop with this tablet, which by the way has awesome sound. The speakers that are they made a point how the stereo speakers face you and not out or away or whatever, as really great speakers. Really solid processor, you know, clearly a lot of RAM, clearly a lot of storage if you pay the full price. And you could replace your desktop computer and take your computer with you anywhere you go. All you need is a USB hub and a USB keyboard, USB mouse, and a monitor to plug it into. And you could have that, like, that could be your desktop.
Okay, so at the low-end level, it's an iPad Pro competitor. And at the high-end level, it's a Surface competitor. That's what it sounds like to me.
Yes. Yeah, 100%. 100% Surface competitor.
Okay.
It's really impressive. I mean, like, and here's the thing. It's like when I posted it during the keynote, they said it starts at $599. And I said, oh, that price is a stinger. And people were asking what I meant by that. And I was like, yeah, it's more than I want to spend for a tablet. But when I saw this setup, I was like, oh, this isn't a tablet. This is a computer.
Do you know which one was used here? Which configuration?
I do not. I did not ask. So...
regardless, it's still like, I mean, look, you can do Linux apps on Chrome OS now. I have figured out how to use some like lighter Windows 10 apps through some emulation apps. It is a lot more powerful. I was hoping to hear a little bit more about the software of Chrome OS. Like, hey, here's some new improvements. But I guess we did just get a big update, so maybe I shouldn't be asking for too much. But that's it. This is the refreshing of that tablet, the Pixel C lineup, that kind of that trajectory that Google was on that it never quite figured out, kind of like how it still hasn't figured out messaging. But at least it's figured out, you know, it's Chrome way. It just figured, let's just put it on a tablet. That's the only way we're going to sell them at this point. Yeah. And I think it's a great in-between.
Yeah,
I agree. I wonder if we'll see OEM partners now bring out the same change to the launcher to a tablet UI. There's a lot of convertibles. There's a lot of 360s or, you know, a fair amount. Are we going to see this roll out beyond the Pixel line so that there's options in the market?
I think that I have some of this UI on my Chromebook Flip, but I have not confirmed that. I will confirm that at a later time. I have to actually update that one.
I will say, though, walking away from the Pixel Slate, it really had me going, could I replace my Mac desktop with this device? Could I replace my Mac laptop with this? Like, I seriously thought about it for a moment. And I was like trying to think, what am I using that I need this Mac laptop still for? So it's pretty tempting. I mean, the foldable keyboard is all right. I feel like that's a little bit of a gimmick and all that sort of stuff, but it looked really cool and it seemed to work. I would love to get my hands on one of these and give it a month trial or something like that and see how it goes. So we'll see. We'll see if I can get one, but it's pretty cool. All right. So that said, all these leaks, all these speculations, we're going to get another watch. We're going to get this. We're going to get that. We got three things. We got a phone, two phones. We got a home hub. And we got the Slate, none of which were surprises. If you guys had to rank them, what would you think? And keep in mind, Google rolled these out in – they did Home Hub first, then the Slate, then the phones. So, Duncan, if you had to rank them, what would be your – like, which was the star? What was the stinker?
So, for me, it would be Slate, Home Hub, 5-inch XL.
All right.
That would be how it – the slate really excited me. For all the reasons you've just said, the home hub is a new form factor. It's interesting. The phones are a little iterative, and all the reasons I said about the phone before. The XL's a stinker for me.
Wow. All right. Flo?
Yeah, I was just thinking about that. I think the more that we talked about the slate, the more, like, just right now I started to get really excited about it. I've really enjoyed my life with the Pixelbook, so it's hard for me to think of anything, I guess, replacing that. I think I'm going to go with Duncan's layout. I'm going to start with the slate. It was pretty darn exciting. The Google Home Hub is just another show of where Google's taking its smart home trajectory. And even though the Pixel 3s are iterative, and I did end up buying one, and I am upgrading, I was going to do that anyway. So I was expecting that the Pixel 3 would be better because that's what we got the last 2 years.
For me, I'm going to deviate slightly. I'm going to go Home Hub, Slate, Pixel 3.
Okay.
And it's inches in between the two. I feel like they did such a good job with the Pixel 2. The Pixel 3 is a little bit of an iterative step.
Like an iPhone S.
Yeah, and I think the software is really what some of the stuff they show on the software side is what makes it sing. But Pixel Slate is very impressive. But in terms of I only have a few hundred dollars to play with tech, Google Hub for a small price point gives me a lot to play with. So
yeah,
Google Home Hub is my number one. All right. So
shall we?
Ron?
Yeah.
Sorry, from your hands on, they set up the announcement of the Pixels that they were spec'd the same, but there's small difference in the screen resolution. So the 5.5 Pixel 3 is a 1080p plus just because of the slightly elongated screen. And the Pixel XL is a QHD. Did you notice in the hand a significant difference in the display quality?
I didn't notice a significant difference in the display quality. That said, my total time in hand was minutes. And I got to tell you, this has been my first Google event my first kind of event like this. That demo area was like a feeding frenzy. Yeah. It was like chum in the water around sharks. It was like you're elbowing, trying just to get your hands on a device. And then there are people with every kind of rig. There were YouTubers and influencers and news people and all this sort of stuff. So it got to the point where I actually left about a half an hour through because I had to get to work. But also it was just like I can't – like. As soon as the keynote was over, I went all the way down there because I had a feeling it was going to get crowded. And within about 15 minutes, it was just like nearly impossible to get your hands on a phone. That said, I held them above my hand. I looked at them. I played with them a little bit. I pulled up some photos. Neither of them did I notice a discernible difference. So,
well, you know, we were just talking about the Google Home. So we're going to go ahead and talk now about some of the exciting software announcements that were made during the Made by Google event today. One of which was related to, I guess, what Ron was most excited about, which was the Google Home Hub. And that's the fact that we're getting a whole new Google Home app interface, and it's all going to make sense once this whole package comes through. So I don't have this app live yet, but there are renders going around. So the Google Home app is getting smart controls, intelligent actions, and household sharing, which is going to make it easier for everybody at home. And probably, maybe Ron, this is something you want to get to help people who come over to be able to like turn off the lights without having to shout something out.
Sure.
Yeah, so the app itself, which is coming on phones everywhere, will have video content, more of a focus on video content, so that when you jump in, you're like, hey, what should I be watching? Because the Google Home app pretty much is the remote if you have the Chromecast ecosystem at your house. This particular redesign was leaked a couple of months ago, but now that we're seeing, you know, we saw what's coming out from the Google Home Hub, we see these renders, it all makes perfect sense that this is the direction that Google's going in. The main screen actually gives you access to your smart home devices. It gives you access by room, which is how you would categorize them in the Google Home app. So, you know, your bedroom, whatever devices you've got in there, you can just easily scroll to that part and then actually control devices from the Google Home app, which you can't really do right now, which is kind of a bummer. And even though, yes, Google was talking about the fact that you have to have a bunch of apps installed, I'm here to tell you, you don't have to use the Google Home app if you don't want to. There's other third-party apps out there that do the same thing. Also, the app is just easy to use. Lets you easily make adjustments. You don't have to go searching through menus. I'm super excited for this update, and I really hope that I get this interface on the Lenovo Smart Display soon, because that one thing that I'm sort of worried about is that there is going to be some disparity between third-party devices and Google devices, and I hope that all this just comes and works perfectly, and I get this new UI, because it looks a lot nicer. It does.
All right.
It does.
Duncan, what did you think of the Google Home app changes?
Yeah, look, I'm quite excited. I've been hoping for this for a while. I've got a Zigbee system set up at home. I got into smart lights a while ago, and I found smart lights and dumb switches are terrible. So I've actually switched to dumb bulbs and smart switches. Yeah. And that's the best of both worlds. For someone who walks in the house and doesn't know how the smart stuff works, they press a button, it just works. But for those who want smart control, you then have the voice actions. And I've been wanting a physical interface. So when they announced on Assistant last week that you were going to have, you could ask to control the device and it would bring up a little display card, I was hoping that would be a hint of something bigger, and today showed that it was. And I've been spamming the update button on my phone at least every 90 seconds since I heard about it.
Yeah, I've also been trying to find an APK somewhere out there, but,
I might have that site open just over there.
Duncan, are you sure you don't want me to smuggle some hardware for you?
we should talk. That said, there's actually there's a difference in the radio frequency standards between the countries. So
that's right.
I can't use US devices, but we've actually
that's
got
because
a fairly.
I read about this, right, Duncan? That's because all of the electrons on Australian devices go counterclockwise, while in America they go clockwise, right?
Something like that. Either that or our mobile spectrum actually interferes with your devices. But I think you had it right the first time.
Yeah, I think I'm right. I think it's like the toilets at the water. Yeah, that's what it is. So, I thought the home stuff was really, really impressive. I think the Home Hub paired. I'm glad that they're extending it to the Google Home app. And LaFleur, like you said, those controls, device controls, and I'm already seeing it in Assistant as well. Like I saw subtle changes roll out in the last couple of days with how I interacted with my devices in the house. So I can't wait to get the new app and just see what it fully can do, even without the Home Hub.
I was going to actually transition over to the next story with you, Ron, because I had seen a picture in your photo album of you and Iron Man. And so I figured you want to talk about that.
Yeah, that was, well, no, I didn't. But so they had a lot when they were talking about the Pixel 3. There was a lot to be said about the camera app and the changes that they can do with the camera. The most notably was that they AR stickers have grown up to the point where they now have a product name. They're now called Playground. Where they are, like with the last Pixel, we saw characters from Stranger Things and Star Wars popping in. This time they announced that characters from Marvel Studios celebrating 10 years of Marvel Studios. And in the demo, we saw Iron Man and Hulk as AR characters. Pretty cool. But now the whole AR thing is a product and it's called Playground. So that's neat. But that was just kind of little bells and whistles. Honestly, I thought one of the strongest parts of the keynote was the changes that are coming to the camera app and some of the functionality that is now enabled with the Pixel 3 and the camera app. Some of it was just mind-blowing, right? So one of them is called so they redesigned the whole Google Camera app as well. So they've redesigned it with tabs so you can swipe via the different modes that are available. I played with it a little and it was way more easier than the current camera app. So I did definitely notice those functions. Google Lens is now integrated into the camera app, which we knew was coming. But Top Shot is the thing that I thought was amazing, because what they're doing is they're combining all of the machine learning and AI capability of both on the device as well as cloud processing in the larger Google, kind of cloud infrastructure. And with Top Shot, you're able to take a picture, and you would think that you just press the shutter button and it takes a picture, but from the moment you press that shutter button till the moment you take your finger off, it's actually taking a ton of pictures. And then you see the picture that you took, and then the AI will recommend to you a better shot. And they had a great video that illustrated this that showed people half smiling, blinking, you know, all those various kind of, you know, when you get a bad shot or like you miss blowing out the candles or anything like that. They're just showing all these photo misses. And then they showed those same moments, but with Top Shot and the AI. And admittedly, it's a demo and it's all orchestrated. But if this does what it says it does, you won't miss a moment with your photos. And that's amazing. And it was, you know me, I'm somewhat cynical, right? I think I went out, I went, wow, during the keynote, because I was just like, because I saw what that could do for it. And if you pick, so when you take the, when you take the photo, it gives you the recommended shot. And then if you choose to save that one, then it will increase the resolution, add the HDR, and then save it for you, which is amazing. It just, it, it's was kind of like future tech. Then, they also had photo booth, which is kind of like what we saw with Google Clips, which is just capturing candid moments, right? Which is that's kind of cool, but it'll do burst kind of images like Clips does. They had Night Sight, which basically is, we all know how we're measuring cameras and the and these phones now is by how well can you take a picture in low light. And I did dislike this part of the presentation, that they, this is the one iPhone comparison where they compared an iPhone photo to the Pixel 3 photo with Night Sight, and the Pixel 3 one looked amazing, but I hate, don't compare yourself to Apple, just do your own thing. But they're using machine learning to pull out the right colors based on the content of the images, and they're able to smooth out the photos to minimize uneven exposures. Pretty amazing. The other big amazing moment with the camera app ties into the front-facing camera, which is, you know, we talked about that, how they have an 8-pixel wide-angle front-facing lens. Now with group selfie, you can tap into that wide-angle lens and, as in the demo, as they say, push the edges, and they show like shots of people trying to take pictures of a group of people and not being able to get everybody in. Or they had one video of a guy trying to show that he was at the Eiffel Tower, but he couldn't get the angle to show the Eiffel Tower. But then they apply group selfie and it goes wide and you see the whole area around it using that wide angle lens. And that was really impressive too. So a lot of improvements on the camera app for the cameras on the phone. Duncan, what did you think of these changes? Did you think these, were you as impressed by Top Shot as I was?
Yeah, definitely. That's really where Google starts showing its difference in the camera space. Like they said, they've made the sensor almost irrelevant. Obviously, it's not, but this computational photography and what they're able to do, this is the next sort of phase of cameras. I think we've done all we can with photons and the size of sensors that we're putting in increasingly smaller phones. So these features were just amazing. Especially the ability to click on a target and then make sure that that target's always in focus. You know, I've got a thing I do with phones I call the slide test, which is I go to the park with my daughter, hi Hannah, and watch her go down a slide and take some shots. And that's one of the ways I test a camera. With something like this, it should just be perfect every time.
Yeah, the demo video that they showed, I mean, I was impressed by it. I mean, Flo, you were watching along with Leo. Were you as impressed with that fun video that they showed, or?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the reason I love the Pixel phone, is because I have access to all of these features. And even people in my life have started to notice that a lot of we have a lot of group Google photo albums, and people have been noticing that the ones that come from my Pixel look really nice. And I'm really looking forward to just having more like bragging rights with these things. And I'm excited. I love little things like a photo booth mode. You know, I'm always into like taking a moody selfie, and I love things like Top Shot, because I often am the group photographer. I'm the one who doesn't mind having her phone in her pocket. I'm the one who is shooting everybody and everything and every silly little like meal everybody's eating. And so I'm glad to be able to continue doing my job for my social groups with the help of some great AI. I mean, there's a reason we keep using this stuff, because it really does work.
Yep.
Now, I think it is also supposed to come to older Pixel phones, if I recall correctly. It was these features, maybe? possibly?
Hopefully. One would assume that, you know, because it's software based, they'll be able to roll that out to the earlier phones. Mm-hmm. But admittedly, some of the stuff they said applied, you know, the machine learning and a lot of the, you know, AI stuff that they've developed that they put on the chip in the Pixel 3s. So I'm wondering what the performance of some of this stuff will be that depends on that chip if you're on a Pixel mm-hmm. 2 or a Pixel 1. You know, but either way, they're adding value to really push you towards the Pixel 3 to get the newest, latest feature and all that stuff, which makes sense because this is where the kind of magic comes from. So.
Or conversely, you can save a little bit of money and see if you can find a Pixel 2 on sale. Yeah. You know, I was getting tweets from people who said they found it as cheap as $300 off at some retailers. So maybe just go for the older phone since it's going to get the updated features. And this is the reason you buy a Pixel phone. It's these exact features. So, I mean, it's my opinion. Shall we talk a little bit about security? We should. So Rick Osterloh in the beginning of the keynote had mentioned something called Titan Security, and this has been uttered before, and I have seen physical iterations of this key floating around. And while I'm not like 100% versed on it, I know that this is something that was mentioned as being a part of the Google product lineup. And of course, it's perfect timing because yesterday we had all this news about Google Plus and, you know, and undisclosed security vulnerabilities and, you know, buzzwords. And so now we've got the Titan Security, chip, which is called the Titan M. Now, that's a really strong name. So this is integrated into the Pixel 3's secure boot process, and it's used to secure the lock screen, strengthen disk encryption, and protect the operating system. So basically, protect its integrity, keep bad things from coming in, from infiltrating it, a fortress, if you will. Rick Osterloh had said during the event that by combining Titan Security both in the data center and on the device, we've created a closed loop for your data across the Google ecosystem. So sort of saying, you know, we're going to do this on the device. Everybody keeps talking about how we don't want all this being done in the cloud and remotely. So let's have it done on the actual device. Let's do encryption on the actual device. I'm not fully versed on how this fully differentiates from previous iterations of phones. But I do know that this was a big word that was used during the keynote today. And so I'm wondering, you know, from either of you or the both of you, what you guys think about this approach to kind of go at it hardware first, since we've spent all these years having Google try to convince us that it's the software that's going to do it for you.
Well, it seems to me like it was software on the hardware.
Yeah. It's true. Right?
I mean, Duncan, what was your take on it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Google's got to the point where they're directly taking on Apple now, and they need the full stack hardware software integration. And, you know, Rick said that near the end of the presentation that, you know, they've built this from the inside out, hardware and software in hand. And so I think they did say there was a physical chip as part of this, as well as infrastructure up on their cloud servers that they had built. Titan's clearly the name they're going for their security, because that's the name of their security key products. So I think it's a good thing. Anything that improves user security, anything that makes it harder to crack into the devices. We've all heard the stories of law enforcement who have, you know, aftermarket product and keys to break encryption and get into it. Anything that can be put on the device that makes that more difficult, and a secure element and a hardware element, from my understanding, makes that much more difficult for them to do than just a pure algorithm. So I think it's partly marketing. I think it's partly competition. But I also think it is a genuine interest in increasing security.
That's a really good point. Ron?
And that's when I was surprised that they didn't address the Google Plus thing. And I thought this is a perfect moment to call to it or whatnot, you know, so... But they didn't. So, I mean, it makes sense. Everybody has, Samsung has Knox, now Google has Titan. There's all something, and this is for the IT crowd. This is for the folks who are really worried about that sort of stuff, and everybody should be worried about it. But the idea of the closed loop, I think, is the real, and putting it on, you know, applying it in software on the chip, on the phone, you know, makes a lot of sense and applies a lot of, you know, kind of it's the evolution of where we've come to from now. So
I also, you know, as Duncan has said, marketing, I'm just thinking about how this fits into the general enterprise ecosystem. We did hear there was a tiny little mention about G Suites, I believe. And so there was a little bit of that like enterprise mention. So I imagine that this will just be another great buzzword to add to that pitch. Yep. Use us for your business.
Yeah. So, and then lastly,
I missed this news item, by the way.
This was a little throwaway that they mentioned, but if you're a Gmail user on the web, we all know Inbox went away and Inbox died, etc. Gmail has kind of inherited a lot of the different functionality that was in Inbox. One of them is Smart Compose. And if you're a Gmail user on the web, you've noticed that Gmail is starting to suggest how to finish your sentence for you, which at first is really disconcerting, and then it's kind of awesome. Well, as a throwaway comment during the keynote, they announced that Smart Compose is going to be coming to the mobile Gmail app and coming to Android as a Pixel exclusive. They didn't say or they didn't disclose how long it will be a Pixel exclusive, but I hope it's a short period of time because that's a cool functionality. They should offer that to everybody. But again, here's the reason to go for the Pixel 3 because you get cool things like Smart Compose. So
you get them first.
Yeah, neat stuff. All right, so all in all, Flo, you watched the whole thing. You did your commentary and all the great stuff. Thumbs up, thumbs down. We were very critical of these keynotes. What is your keynote review?
That was such a great keynote. Not only was it just okay in terms of keynotes, it was actually a very well structured keynote. It wasn't too much. I thought it was the perfect time as well. By the time it was over, Leo and I were like, "That's it."
It was like an hour. It was about an hour.
Only about an hour, and we still got to go through a lot of announcements, and we also had to do a little scavenger hunt and look in the Google store afterwards. And I also really liked the fact that they brought in more people that I don't know from Google to talk about the product that they're working on. I do actually really enjoy when they do that because I feel like it does add to that personality that Google tries to put forth. And I also really love that they brought the person out who has sort of, their names are escaping me at this point, but who brought this design paradigm to the Google that we know now. Because when I look down at my devices now, when I look at them in my home, when I look at them in my purse even, they all have this nice matchy-matchy aesthetic going for them. And before, that wasn't really what it was like to be an Android user because we had so many OEMs playing. And now it's like, you have a Google path to take. So I am super excited to spend money.
Yeah.
Super excited.
Duncan, thumbs up or thumbs down?
I think overall, thumbs up. It's always exciting when Google gives us a hardware shower. There's a few things I'd like to see different, but overall, I think it does take that next step in that integrated hardware sort of offering. And that's what I am excited to see is how that can continue on. What I also would like to see, though, I love the partner network, and my preferred phones actually aren't Pixel devices, they're Android One devices at the moment. And so I want to see how they can keep that structured ecosystem, but I'll open it up to partners who are willing to keep that consistency in some elements, but give different expressions, you know, be together, not the same.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Nice. Good callback there. I give it a thumbs up. It was great. It was well run. It was very cool. They took over this whole space and decorated it beautifully. And the demo stuff was really cool. The keynote was really impressive. The highlight of the keynote for me was after Rick Osterloh was talking, and gave the opening remarks and then basically revealed what we'd be seeing. And I was sitting in front of a prop in the middle of the row that looked kind of like a Google Home with the top cut off, like it was kind of on an angle. And I even posted on Instagram stories. I'm like, what is this, an enormous Google Home or something? And when they showed the shot of all the products together and saying, this is what we'll be showing, this thing opened up a door on top of it and the products came up out of it.
That was cool.
Sat there for 30 seconds and then went back down and went away. And it was the most bananas weirdo thing that I've ever seen. Yeah, you could see it right behind my badge there in that photo. That round circle, that the inset round circle went away, and that's where the products came up and out of, and it was bananas. So I liked that there was a little craziness to it.
I was trying to find you, by the way, in the crowd. Unfortunately,
oh, I was to the right. I was to stage right, as you can see there. So, wow. But I was in the press area. I was off to the side. But listen, Google had a lot of announcements in the keynotes, but they had stuff they didn't announce that happened today.
Yeah.
We're gonna get, and I'm gonna close it out with showing you what the gifts were that I got for attending.
Oh,
But first, we're gonna thank our next sponsor, and we're gonna thank LegalZoom for sponsoring this episode of All About Android. And listen, you know, we all work. We're all in business, and you know the saying. Time is money. That's totally true, especially when you run your own business. But running a successful business involves taxes, contracts, a whole lot of fine print, and things that eat up too much of your time. Well, that means it's time to turn to LegalZoom. Over the last 17 years, more than 1 million Americans have used LegalZoom to help launch their businesses. But that's only the beginning. LegalZoom has a network of independent attorneys and tax professionals who can provide you with the advice you need to get through the daily grind of running your business. And the best part is you don't have to worry about driving anyone's office or being billed by the hour because LegalZoom isn't a law firm. You can count on LegalZoom to provide the business resources you need and service that fits into your schedule. Invest your time and money into growing your business and let LegalZoom help with the legal stuff. Go to LegalZoom.com and use promo code AAA at checkout for special savings. That's LegalZoom.com and use code AAA. LegalZoom, where life meets legal. Thanks, LegalZoom, for your support of All About Android. That said, Victor, let's do some more hardware. I threw him for a loop there.
We got a lot of hardware.
Yep, we do, but we'll go quickly here. So what they didn't announce at the keynote, and yet they gave to me as I walked out.
What? You got one?
Was the new Google Chromecast.
Oh, I'm kind of jealous.
This is a minor update to the Google Chromecast. I didn't realize Chromecast hasn't been updated in years.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, this is the exact device that we saw sold in a Best Buy last week by mistake. And what it is it's got a new Chromecast with multi-room support. But it doesn't have Bluetooth support as we thought it would be. It's just on Wi-Fi. But it's got the new matte finish. I understand now why they didn't announce it. Basically, they just added multi-room support and that's it. But still, it was nice to get it in my little goodie bag. And that's not all they gave me in the goodie bag.
Oh.
When I checked in, they told us that to come back because they have a gift for us. And I was like, ooh, am I going to get a phone? Am I going to get a home hub? Am I going to get a Slate? I don't know. We'll see. I got the Chromecast and I also got... the Disney sponsored Google Mini.
Oh my gosh, Ron, it's so perfect for you too. So, I'm so happy you got it.
I'm going to do an impromptu unboxing.
Yay, I'm so excited.
For a moment, I was like, what the heck is this? And then I got home and realized that it is a Mickey Mouse designed, and I have my Google Home Mini here, that you put the Google Home Mini in and you put that on your. So it works better if you have the black Google Home Mini because right now it just looks like Mickey with a red face.
Sunburn.
Yeah, a sunburn. There it is. But I got this thing.
You can just put a little like black nose on it. Like just cut out a little black circle.
Yeah, that's a good idea. But so it's called the Den and it's by Otter, the folks who make Otter cases and that sort of the Otter box. And it's a mount for Google Home Mini. This also was not in the keynote presentation. So,
and also not in the keynote presentation was apparently not exactly the update to the Pixel Buds that we were hoping for, but instead USB-C Pixel Buds.
And I got photos of these in my photo gallery. Flo, you told me to go find the accessories, and I found these Pixel Buds up close, and they looked like headphones.
Just. Regular old headphones. That's it.
I just like headphones.
They're only $30. So if you want them, you could just go buy them. They're $30.
They're on the right next to the Pixel Buds.
So beautifully right wound up. They look so pedestrian next to the Pixel
They look like
Buds.
They'll get tangled easily.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely. But how many times have you needed that USB-C? So they in case you're curious, it's 44 inches, the cord, and it's got a button for Google Assistant access, and it can play 24-bit digital audio. It has adjustable loops. $30. Go get them.
Not bad. And then one thing that didn't get announced at the keynote was there's no new watch. Nope. Some of us were speculating that there might be watch, given that the Wear OS had gotten so many updates and things like that. No watch at the announcement, no mention of wearables, nothing. But because you guys love wearables so much, Victor, let's do some hardware. I just love this bumper. I wanted to see it.
This little watch.
Announced earlier in the week, though, was LG's new Watch W7, which blends a smartwatch with mechanical hands watch, which is pretty cool. And if you can switch between the 1.2-inch LCD screen and the mechanical hands, and the mechanical hands will work even after the watch's battery dies, which is pretty cool. If you go into watch only mode, it will keep working for 100 days after that. It's pretty cool, but it's got a stainless steel body, and it's uses Qualcomm's Wear 2100 chipset with 768 mega RAM rather than the Qualcomm Wear 3100. So it's a little lacking in that, but it's $449, and Flo, this is super dude watch, so yes. I know you want it. There are no lady versions here.
No.
Lady watch.
No.
Duncan, what do you make of the state of wearables right now? Have you seen the Wear OS updates? Do you think wearables are dead, or what do you think?
I've got the Wear OS update on my wrist right now.
There it is.
I'm bullish on Android Wear, especially I've got the TicWatch Pro for the contactless payments, because we've got ubiquitous contactless payments in Australia. I love it. I wasn't fond of the last interface, but the new update to Wear 2 is great. I love it. It's made it so much better, so much more usable. The swipe left, right, up, down, giving you access to four different parts of Wear OS is really great. I love the TicWatch Pro, but I am looking forward to getting a Snapdragon 21 Wear product sometime, hopefully before Christmas, because that's the Christmas present to myself.
Well, here's to hoping.
Cool.
Here's to hoping something comes.
Let's hope some apps come.
Let's hope. Shall we, Victor? This bumper is very hopeful too, actually, when you hear the music.
This is Flo's App Shack.
Oh yeah, perfect. All right, so it's my App Shack. So in the App Shack today, we're going to talk about, first and foremost, another little leak that came out from the Google announcement today, which was that Duplex is officially coming. It's no longer just a scary demo at Google I.O. It is now going to become a real, tangible.
It's a real boy.
Pinocchio. So the demo that was shown today was in the context of, you know, we've got a lot of spam calls that have been going. Spam calls have really taken over the United States of America. I don't know about you down under, Duncan, but here they've really taken advantage of us. And they're terrible because they call you from a number that is almost exactly like your phone number. So you think it's just somebody else's line, but it's not. And so what Google showed was the ability to use Duplex to basically tell spam callers, leave me alone. Which, listen, I'm kind of here for it. Like, I appreciate that. You don't have to do the emotional labor of having to talk to a person, or maybe getting angry and yelling at somebody because you're having a bad day, which you shouldn't do because that's like mean. So instead, you could just have an assistant do it for you. And so it looks like Duplex is going to come to us first by way of the Pixel phones. And it's going to roll out on a city by city basis. So the first batch will include New York, Atlanta, Phoenix, and the San Francisco Bay Area. So you know that Ron and I will be making a lot of calls to restaurants to make reservations. Isn't that right, Ron?
That's for sure. And this actually reminds me of something we forgot from the keynote, which was in the Pixel, was the call screening feature, which is...
Right, that's what it's called, call screening.
Yeah, call screening, right, which is the Google Duplex technology. But as opposed to Google Duplex, what we saw at I.O., where assistant would call a restaurant for you and make a reservation, this will receive a call, talk to the person, and then tell you and the assistant what they're calling about. So the demo was like, hi, so-and-so's not answering their phone right now. What are you calling about? And it was some offer giving an offer, and then assistant tells us what the offer is, and then we could decide whether to answer the phone or not. It's bananas. It's crazy. It's like,
I mean,
that
I still
was
want 10% off, right?
Yeah. that was my other wow moment of like, okay, cool. So my phone's AI is going to talk to people who call me, and I don't need to talk to them. That's crazy.
You know, so. I'm really just looking forward to having a computer screen all my spam calls. I'm really looking forward to that. I get a lot of them daily. It's infuriating.
Is it as bad in Australia, Duncan?
Yeah.
We have a do not call register, which legitimate organizations have to follow. So that cuts a lot of that out. I don't get too many, but they do come through. But you know, you do have to do the listen to it and just hang up on them. I'll have to rethink what I'm doing in a bad mood flow from the point of view of taking out my stress on the scammers. Yeah. But yeah, it's not as big an issue, but I also am fairly confident this product won't hit Australian shores anytime in the next lifetime.
There was a nice window in America of like 6 months where the do not call list worked really well. Like it was like, I remember when I registered my phone number and they just stopped. And then it seems like everyone forgot it exists. So, oh, well.
They're a little more
nefarious. I think it's the legitimate ones stop.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. The world is made of illegitimate people. Okay.
Yeah.
Flo, what else we got?
Last but not least, and you probably have already seen this on your phone if you've been updating your phone on time, it's the new Google Assistant page. So basically, it's more visual. It looks a lot like the demonstrations that we have seen through smart displays. This all makes so much sense. I mean, Google is all about the consolidation of its assistant across devices. And in order for it to really do that, you've got to have a similar experience across devices. So now I am getting in my little Google shelf the exact same experience that, you know, the exact same touch experience, I should say, that I've been getting from the Lenovo Smart Display. It's a nicer way to organize the information. It makes it a little more navigable. I can more easily kind of swipe or get rid of things if I don't want them there. It's a much easier one-handed use as well for like the smaller phones. And so this is just more evidence that everything Google's doing is just to make it, just to make you really want to use its product. And it's working on me. I don't know about you guys, but it certainly is working on me.
I totally agree. The little touches and the little design stuff they've been doing over the past couple of months, pretty much since I/O, and then ramped up after Pi came out, it just continues to smooth the experience and make it more elegant and make it easier to use. Yeah. The assistant, I feel like every time I use the assistant, it looks a little different, and then I figure out what the change is, and I'm like, oh, that's better. Yeah, it's definitely going in a good direction.
Duncan, do you have any hopes and fears for the Google Assistant for you?
Look, I love Assistant. I think these nice little touches is very un-Googly. Google's always been good at getting something everyone loves and rolling it out 60% and then sort of stopping. Whereas we're just seeing a continual rollout, a continual sort of homogenification of their ecosystem. And I think this is the perfect example. You go to the home app, you go to a smart display, you go to Assistant, and you're going to get a semi-consistent approach to that element. And that's coming out with a lot of their design rollouts now. And I'm really excited that Google might actually follow through and take all of these thoughts to its logical sort of conclusion, and we'll have a real integrated product look.
Yeah.
I think that's I feel like that's a great optimistic note to end, because it was a great keynote.
Before we end, I do want to apply one correction to something I said earlier that was false. Turns out you get the Pixel charging stand for free if you order through Verizon, not the Google Store. I was mistaken.
The Google Store.
That's why you paid, Flo. So I'm sorry. I got that wrong. So.
Right.
And one of the Canadian as well. One of the Canadian.
Right, but we ignore the Canadians. The Canadians don't matter.
No, sorry, chat room.
Sorry to all Canadians.
You Canadians. I'm joking. I love you guys. I saw Daniel Bader today speaking of Canadians. It was like so many friends of the show. It was great. But yeah, great day. Wonderful day for Google. I'm glad I went. It was great to be part of the club. It was funny because when I left and they gave me my gift bag and they asked if I wanted to recycle my badge. And I was like, oh yeah, sure. Cause I like recycling. But then I was like, actually, no, I want to keep this one.
Kept all mine.
I got in.
Yeah. I've kept all mine in a box. It's a really nice memory. And the lanyards are really good that they give.
Yeah. Good lanyard. All right. Well, there it is. He's got one. It's in my bag. I'll get it later. All right. Before we get into the arena, let's thank our last sponsor of the evening. We want to thank Rocket Mortgage for sponsoring this episode of All About Android. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, in fact. Let's talk about buying a home for a second, right? Because of rising interest rates, there's a lot of unpredictability when it comes to buying a home these days. And it's causing a lot of anxiety with people. Trust me, I can understand that anxiety. Well, our friends at Quicken Loans are doing something about that. They're calling it the power buying process. And here's how it works. I'm going to lay it out for you. Step one, you answer a few simple questions and they'll check your credit for a pre-qualified approval. Then step two, Quicken Loans will verify your income, assets, and credit in less than 24 hours and give you a verified approval, which gives you the strength of a cash buyer. And if you've purchased homes before, you know how strong, how what a good position it is to be a cash buyer in real estate. I watch Flip or Flop. I know how that works. Step three in this process, once you're verified, you qualify for their all-new exclusive Rate Shield approval. And this is where it gets amazing. First, they'll lock up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. Now, here's the best part. If interest rates go up, your rate stays the same. But if rates go down, your rate also drops. Either way, you win. That's amazing. You get locked in at that rate that you can hold on and give you the time, give you 90 days to find that home that you love. It's the kind of thinking you'd expect from America's largest mortgage lender. So go get started. Go to rocketmortgage.com/android. Rate Shield approval is only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. That's rocketmortgage.com/android. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support. Thanks, Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Yay.
All right.
Well, that said, Flo, you know what time it is?
It's time to battle it out in the arena.
So many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena.
Realizing right. It's a little intense with the only one lives thing, but anyway.
I know it is a little rough, but all right. So Flo, you weren't here last week.
I was not.
So you missed out on the arena, but let's check the results from last week's poll. And I wish I kept track of when I predicted the winner, because last week I knew this was going to win. Jason gets the solid victory with Pac-Man. Ralph Breaks the Maze, which is the crossover between Wreck-It Ralph and Pac-Man, with 53% of the vote. I came in second with Idea Note, which is a great notepad kind of thing. And Niagara Launcher was the third place winner. And Ryan Whitwam, our guest last week from Android Police, he's the third place winner. I'm not going to say loser, third place winner. So with that, the results through 40 weeks. We are 40 weeks through the year, folks.
Aye, aye, aye.
12 weeks to go.
Oh.
Flo, I'm sorry, you're still in last place with 83 points.
It's been a busy year. I haven't had time to play with apps.
I know. It's fine. Jason, although, now has two wins in a row, I believe. The chat room will correct me. I'm sure Wade County in the chat room keeps track of this stuff will correct me, but I believe he's got two wins in a row. That brings him up to 98 points. I'm in second place by a thread with 101 points, and the guests are still sitting pretty in first place with 116 points. So, Duncan, no pressure. Mm-hmm. You can relax, because there's no way anyone's going to catch you as you represent the guest team. But that said, Flo, you were not here last week, so that means you go first.
I do. And in keeping with the theme of Flo just not having as much, I mean, I tried to play with apps before I come here on the show, but unfortunately haven't really had time for that. So I brought a cute, silly app. Let's get this adjusted so you can see. Look at my sad face launcher. Anyway, I brought a cute, silly app called Kawaii Tarot. And I mean, obviously, if you don't believe in tarot, this is like, bah. But it's I really like the app. I thought, I really like the artist who's behind this. And so I wanted to, you know, support them by downloading the app. And it's honestly just kind of a fun, like, way to start the day and just sort of think about, like, how am I going to start the day? So you open it up, you ask it a question. Will the end of the show go well? And then you get a reading. I got the King of Wands. And so now what I can do is tap on it. I can read what it means. It signifies upcoming financial luck for me. So I'd like to think I was very lucky today. I was able to buy a Pixel 3. So I really appreciate that ability. And then you can keep a little journal if you want. On your little notes. And it's just really cute. There's a book that accompanies this app. It's, you know, it's extremely simple. It's extremely simple. And then if you want to order it, you can just go in here and order it. Kawaii Tarot. It's cute tarot. It's my app.
It's just something about knowing your target audience.
I know. Ron is just like, listen, today was a busy day.
It was a busy day. I don't blame you.
And this is a cute app. And you know what? I'm going to show you cute apps on the Google Play Store. And that's a cute app. Support your cute devs. All more right. Cute things.
Kawhi Taro. All right. So, Duncan, as a guest in the arena, usually we have overarching rules that are kind of unspoken rules. One of them is that we don't use any apps that are by Google because it's like you can't use the Gmail app or something like that. But the app you brought to the arena, we decided we're going to let it in because it's not in the standard AOP of Android or whatnot. And I think it's worth throwing into the arena. So, Duncan, why don't you tell us about your app?
Okay. So this week I'm bringing Google Trips, which is a beta app that was released, I think, to the sort of the Mapmaker community originally about 2016. And what it does is it aggregates all of your travel style notifications and emails that come through Gmail, very similar to how it's done in Inbox. But one of the reasons I've brought this is with Inbox eventually going away, people who really love that feature might want a way of replacing it. So what it does is just monitors your emails like Inbox does and the flight section of Gmail does, but it brings it all in here. So it'll detect your air tickets, it'll detect your car reservations, it'll detect your hotel accommodation, and you can see there that it puts the details in there. But then it takes it one step further, that you can then actually download maps for the area. You can go in and plan your trip. And I was just in Berlin for IFA earlier this year. And the first thing I did is when I got my itinerary loaded in my phone, I went straight into this app and I clicked on the What to Do tab and I started having a look at where to go, the Brandenburg Gate, Checkport, Charlie, the Reichstag, places like that, Berlin Wall, and started to plan what I was going to do inside the app. So you can star things where you want to go, and then they then appear on Google Maps. So it gives you a really good deep integration from Gmail to planning to Google Maps, and I just really love it. I travel a little bit for work, a little bit for Ozdroid, and a little bit for personal, and it's just a really great way of aggregating all that. The other thing I love is it saves all your old trips. So sometimes I'm sitting on the couch of an evening and sort of open it up and scroll back and have a look at previous trips I've taken, and just sort of remember where I've been, what I've done, and, I find it a really useful app. So especially if you love the way that Inbox handles travel notifications, you're going to love this because it's pretty much the same cards but brought into one single app.
In my life. There we go. Now you can all see where I've been the last year.
And so, you can go into one of those cards.
That trip to Redwood City was going to Google I.O. That was my trip to Redwood City. And actually, this is not my trip. This is a friend visiting trip. So I have other people's information in my trips.
Yeah, so if it ends up in your Gmail, the itinerary, it'll scrape that data and put it in. You can see that download Oakland button there. You press that. And then while you're on the plane, you'll actually have offline access to all the information I was talking about. And if you jump into the Portland to Oakland, you can say, what to do.
Actually, let me show you one that's not on somebody else's name. So I don't want
to.
There we go.
But if you just go to things to do there, because if you don't hit reservations, you won't see anything personal. And it starts giving you ideas of where to go.
So huge communist palace, now parliament. This is Romania. It's just communist palace.
I find it a really great way to plan my trips, to get markers through to Google Maps, and sort of get an idea of things that I wouldn't have known otherwise. So I've used it for all my travels since I've been on the beta for it. So that's my app for the week.
Have you used any of the discounts? Because I'm seeing a lot of deals here that I am not taking advantage of, and I feel like I should be using these.
I have to admit, I haven't. I probably should start doing that.
Well, that's Google Trips.
So, and remember, right. a vote for Google Trips is a vote for Team GG&G.
It's true.
wow, now it's spreading. It's like Mateo's here. Next thing Duncan's going to be doing is talking about goats.
Mateo's planted them all over the show.
I think goats are sacrosanct to Mateo. But as Mateo says, a vote for a guest app is a vote for GG&G.
It's true.
Right. Proudly a member of that team.
Oh, no. I can't take Duncan. Down this lower third.
Uh-oh.
I'm just kidding.
Oh.
Was it goat trips for a minute?
All right. Well, that said, now that the lower third is gone, let's move on to the last app in the arena, which is mine. And this is a Burke special. I'll give him credit. He's sharing some great games with me, and this one has had me playing all week. It's called Bendy and Nightmare Run. And usually I'm not a fan of the Endless Runner games, but this is done in the style of Joey Drew Studios animation. And it's actually, if you look at it, if you hit continue, it's done like old 1930s cartoons as a Endless Runner, which is amazing, right? So if we go to the first mission there, Bendy walks the plank, and it's literally, you can just go, you go to Act 1 and hit play now.
There's like the cards.
Yeah, I know. That. Oh, if you like the cards, you're going to love this. So, it tells you how to, when he's launched the game, it tells you how to do it. You just swipe left and right to move Bendy left and right, and swipe up to make him jump, and double swipe to make him super jump, right? And then he can also stomp down by going up and down. Go up and down, flow. Wow.
Up and down. Oh, like that. Yep. Okay.
There you go. Yeah. And then you can collect, swipe to the right to collect the axe. And then you can use it. You can throw it at things, right? Hopefully Flo can get through the tutorial and we can show you the game. You're going to collect cans of spinach and health things to increase your health. And then once you get in the game, it has this like film projector flicker to it. And it just looks amazing. And admittedly, I have like a retro fascination with things. And it kind of reminds me of the old, you know, Mickey Mouse cartoons and old Felix the Cat stuff and things like that.
Oh, yeah.
But they've integrated the gimmick of the 1930s look and feel with a really great Endless Runner functionality. I find myself on the subway just, you know, making Bendy, you know, not get caught by the big thing with teeth behind him chasing him. And it's really captured my imagination here. So Bendy and Nightmare Run, it's free in the Google Play Store. It does have limited use of ads. You can do in-app purchases and all that stuff as you expect with a game for the monetizing of a mobile game. But yeah, Bendy and Nightmare Run, if you're tired of the standard same old kind of thing and you want something that's a little more high concept, come back to 1935 and the early days of animation.
This is challenging.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh boy, I'm going to get eaten or whatever is going to happen to me.
So Bendy and Nightmare Run in the Google Play Store. Thank you, Flo, for the demo.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for bringing much better apps than me in today to the arena. Of course, if you'd like to vote, you can do that at bit.ly/AAApoll390. That's the episode number of today's episode.
It's already posted in the All About Android community on Google Plus, so you can find it there, or bit.ly/AApoll390. And now's the time where we find out who's Victor going to side with.
I knew it.
Oh, Bendy.
I completely understand about Kawaii Tarot. Thank you, everyone, for being here for me today.
Although I do have to say, Duncan's right, there was a goat in the on the video for the Google trips. Or I don't know if Duncan said it or somebody in the chat room. So
there it is. Of course it was. Because that makes sense. Mateo is always watching.
Thank you everyone for tuning in today for all like so much news that we distilled down to the very essence.
And the great thing is that guaranteed we missed some things, and we'll just do this all again next week when Jason's back to get Jason's impressions, and we'll cover the things we missed. So
yeah, I agree. Duncan, thank you so much for joining us like all the way from Australia and for your wonderful opinions today and your perspective and for being here and carrying through Team GG&G.
No, you're welcome. Thank you very much for having me. It's always a blast to come on. It's always good. You can catch the work that we do here at osdroid.net. The team, there's not many of us, but you'd be surprised at how much good content the team puts out on a daily basis. Obviously, today there's been quite a bit with the Pixel announcement.
I was going to say, you guys are definitely the Android watchdogs down under. And I know I keep saying that cliched phrase, and I apologize.
We love it. We own it.
All right. That's fair enough. Thank you, Duncan, so much.
At least half of my writing. Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here. Ron, thank you for also, you know, being here.
My pleasure. It's so much fun. This was my moment in the sun. I got to go to a Google event. I literally walked in, and when I was checking in, I was looking over my shoulder, waiting for like the joke to like the cameras to come out. Like, haha, you don't get in. But it didn't happen. I was one of them. I felt like a real Google pundit.
I'm anyway. Glad. I'm glad that you were there because you know there's an energy. There's an energy.
Yes, there is.
Especially
there
when you're a fan of this stuff.
Yeah. So if you wanted to get my total impressions, go to my Twitter account at RonXO on Twitter, and you could see all the live tweets I did during the thing. I didn't try to do too much. I tried to add my own special blend of it. Or you can go to my Instagram where I posted an Instagram story throughout the entire event, as well as I also posted a gallery of photos in that first one where you see the big Google. I posted a bunch of photos, a lot of the same ones you saw tonight in the photo gallery that we used to show off the event. But if you want to see some of the products up close and personal, you can go Instagram.com/RonXO. And you can see it all there. Hold on, that photo, Victor. I totally forgot about this. They had a slate hooked up to a USB turntable with a DJ app, and you could DJ with the Google with the Pixel Slate.
Finally.
How cool is that? How cool. So I thought that was neat. Anyway, that is super neat. But lastly, unrelated to Google, if you like television and TV shows, I strongly recommend you go check out my new podcast at finalepodcast.com. Where me and my co-host Carrie, we talk about a TV show that I watched every episode of and she watched none of it. And we both watched the series finale of the show and discussed. And I answer questions. She points out things that might seem obvious to longtime viewers that we never noticed. It's a fun time. This week's episode is The Good Wife, which is one of my favorite shows ever that was on CBS for years. We watched the series finale. And in fact, The Good Wife was the TV show that inspired the podcast.
Oh, okay.
So it's worth listening to hear that whole story. But yeah, please go subscribe. We're on everything now. We're on Apple Podcasts, Pocket Cast, Google Podcasts. We're on Spotify now. We're on Radio Public. So please go subscribe. It's hard to launch a new podcast in this environment. So everyone's support is helpful. Thank you. So finalepodcast.com.
I can't wait to listen to the one about The Good Wife.
Great show. Most morally ambiguous show on television.
Oh, boy. Okay. Well, now I really want to watch it. I am just on the internet. If you'd like to find me on the internet, I'm at florenceion.com. And I've also just put a story up on Lifehacker today. So if you want to go to lifehacker.com, I've got all the important news for you that you can use from today's keynote event. As for those of us here at All About Android, if you would like to stay in touch with us, you can definitely do that. You can leave us a voicemail at 347-SHOW-AAA. You can send us an email at AAA@twit.tv. You can tweet us at Android Show. We definitely read through those. You can check out the list of apps that we've brought to the arena at twit.to/Android apps and check out the stats at twit.to/arena stats. You can also come watch the show live if you'd like to. All you have to do is email us and let us know you're coming to get tickets at tickets@twit.tv. And if you'd like to check out our show notes and past episodes, that's at twit.tv/AAA. Or, of course, you can catch us on the live stream here every Tuesday starting at 5 p.m. Pacific. 5 p.m. Pacific. And that means it's time for me to go. Thank you, everyone, for joining us this week. And until next week. Until next week. Have a great week. See you next time. I didn't know what to leave you off with.
Well, ran out of gas.
I completely ran.
It was a long day. It was a made by Google kind of day.
It was. Thank you, everyone, for joining us.